Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions.
Police found 27 corpses.
Australia's worst serial killer.
Even though I didn't want to get in the car, I had to.
With Amanda Howard and Robert McKnight.
Hello and welcome to a brand new season of Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. And we couldn't do it without the serial killer whisperer, Amanda Howard. Hello.
Robert, how are you going? It's nice to see you again.
Well, seeing being the operative word, because this season we are also doing a video version of the podcast. Amanda, this is truly, truly exciting.
It is exciting, except that I can't do it in my pajamas anymore.
I'm just glad you actually got dressed this time.
I know, right?
Although, I'm sure there's some fans of yours who'd be hoping you didn't.
Oh, goodness, no.
Now, look, we are going to be doing this whole season as a video podcast as well as the audio podcast. To watch it, all you have to do is go to mwm.uscreen.io. That's MWM for Monsters Who Murder. Uscreen is our provider, uscreen.io. And I got no idea what the IO stands for, Amanda.
No, not at all. I'm sorry. I can talk about serial killers, talk about websites and things. Yeah, no, not my area of expertise.
Yeah, mine either. Hey, so we're starting off this season with Stephen McDaniel. Give us the headline to draw us through to the psychological profile.
The headline would be killer almost confesses on live television to the murder of a friend.
Wow, that's a good headline. Well, Stephen McDaniel is coming up. He's coming up a little later in this edition of Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. In the meantime, let's get into the news as we always do. Because police in France fear there may be hunting a serial killer after four women vanished from their homes while jogging. The victims have all disappeared in the last 3 months and police are investigating every possibility and every hypothesis. According to The Sun, a spokesperson for the Central Service for Criminal Intelligence said it is true that we are facing a serial phenomenon. They said that they are currently looking for connections between the four separate investigations. Amanda, what do we know about this case?
Well, so far it looks very much to be a serial killer case because there's so many similarities between the victims. So all these women are between sort of 35 and 45, which would suggest that the killer's around the same age. Most of the women except one were out jogging when they were picked up. One of them was actually taken from her home in the middle of the night, which is actually horrifying. They were sort of looking at a couple of other suspects, including the last woman's husband, but he's been cleared. And so now it's actually looking at how these cases are connected and, you know, there's those red flags already coming up.
Now, it's interesting, isn't it, that the police here are actually saying it could be a serial killer. So often we see authorities deny any possibility. They don't want to alarm the public. They also may be investigating and don't want to tip off the potential, the killer, the suspected killer. So this is a very different tact.
I mean, yeah, there is a lot of official jargon that goes on saying, you know, it's not a serial killer because it makes the police look like that they're failing if one person is continuing to kill and they're not actually catching them sooner. So when we actually have a case that they say, yes, this is a serial killer, I think it actually makes people a bit more aware and I think we can actually save lives rather than trying to save face, which is what seems to be the issue.
Indeed. All right, let's move on. Because a convicted serial killer who was on death row has died of brain cancer. Joseph Edward Duncan, 58, who was on federal death row, had been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. He was sentenced to death in 2008 following his conviction for the killing of 9-year-old Dylan Guone and three others in Idaho. Amanda, this guy, he really was a piece of work, wasn't he?
I think he's up there as one of the worst. I would put him up there beside David Parker Ray for what he did and what he did to the Groen family. It's just horrifying to imagine that this man's plan was to do what he did and to kidnap these two children and then murder Dylan and then take Shasta along with him. It just gives me chills, this case.
Now, look, when I was doing some Googling on this guy, I came across an article which was really disturbing and showed him with a child he abducted. Can you tell me about this story? We've got the images here as well.
Well, what actually happened was he had abducted the two children, as I said, and Shasta, who's in the images that we're seeing. This is actually, I think, just before they were able to rescue her because a woman in Wendy's recognised her and called the police while they were sitting in Wendy's. But Shasta was actually taken through some horrific abuse and torture that he did to her before she was able to escape from his grip, purely because, as I said, someone identified her, but it had
been
several days.
Persons reports, had she? Like, this was a girl who was missing that people knew was a high profile case.
Well, yeah, because he had killed the parents,
yep,
and then abducted the two children. And what he did to them was actually quite brutal and graphic. And then Dylan was found, and so they just expected that Shasta was going to be the next body they found. But luckily, she was found alive. She's actually quite active on Facebook. I don't expect people to go and chase her. Please don't. But she is one of these survivors who's actually using her trauma to help others. And it's just so reassuring now that she can do this. I mean, I wish she didn't have to, but for what she endured, she's a good kid. I mean, she's a lot older now, but I would still consider her a kid because she is frozen in time because of this case.
And look, just for the people who are listening to this as an audio podcast, those images, they're really confronting because they are of him in a, I think he said it was a Wendy's, and you can see him with the little girl just walking in, and then in the second picture, he's handing her something, and it just looks like a father and daughter out at the supermarket. You know, he's getting a coffee, she might be getting a little treat.
Yeah, I mean, it does, but when you look closer, the way that she's sort of hugging herself, that this is a self-comforting that she's actually doing, that she's so terrified that the only way to sort of stop herself from shaking, because this sort of fear creates like coldness as well, that she's actually shivering because she's in so much fear of what's going to happen next. And, you know, and there's all these people around and no one really knows that she is going through that horrendous abuse. But, yeah, it was just moments after that.
And just the arrogance of this guy thinking he could take her out and about and be fine.
Yeah, there's actually going to be a few cases that we're doing like this that are coming up. So I've already started digging through some, and it's not the only time that it's happened. And JC Lou Dugard is a case that we'll be doing soon. And she had been kidnapped 18 years prior before she was finally rescued, and she even had two children to her kidnapper. So I mean, this is something that does happen, and the fact that they feel that confident is just absolutely shocking.
Well, I'm going to add this one to your big list. You've got 25 seasons worth. We're at season 11, so you've time to start planning season 26. I'm interested in this guy.
Duncan's already on the list. It's okay.
Of course he is. All right, let's move on, because the hunt for a serial killer who preyed on gay men in Toronto was hampered by serious flaws in the police investigation, including the stereotyping of LGBTQ plus people by police officers and a lack of public trust, a new report has concluded. Bruce MacArthur, who targeted men living on the margins of society, was given 8 life sentences in 2019, but members of Toronto's LGBTQ plus community had long feared that police ignored critical leads as he continued to kill. Global News has more.
This is the scathing 900-page report that retired Justice Gloria Epstein wrote, finding systemic bias in the handling of missing persons cases, specifically those involving the eight men who were victims of serial killer Bruce MacArthur. The report, commissioned in June 2018, found that opportunities were missed to capture MacArthur sooner, starting with the investigation into his first victim in 2010.
We found a series of deficiencies in how that investigation was conducted. It was given low priority. The risk assessment was, in Judge Epstein's view, incorrect. There were significant red flags that suggested that there was a strong possibility of foul play.
Epstein found MacArthur had a potentially meaningful connection to three men who disappeared in the LGBTQ community. But MacArthur went unnoticed, as did his prior convictions, the failure blamed on a siloed approach. Epstein addressed statements then-Chief Mark Saunders made to the media just a month before MacArthur's arrest.
There were a lot of things that were swirling out in the public. The fact that there was a serial killer that was out there, the evidence does not point to that. The evidence does not suggest that.
Judge Epstein found that the comments were deeply unfortunate and contributed to the frayed relationship that exists already between the service and vulnerable and marginalized communities.
Oh, Amanda, when we were covering this case at the time, there seemed to be some issues, including the police lying about the fact that this was the work of a serial killer. But obviously now we're seeing there's way more to it.
And I'm glad that they're actually doing this investigation, and I cannot wait to get my hands on that report. As you know, I will read the whole thing.
Yes.
It's because it's because we see these things like that these people are marginalized and these words and terms that come up with cases like this, that people just don't want to think that they're there, and the fact that someone is hunting them and killing them, it just sort of creates a us and them environment that the Canadian police seem to have been part of creating. So there was this chasm between them that if they don't see it, then they can't investigate it. And so I think that, as I said, there was this silent line between the gay community and the police. And so to be able to come forward now and say, yeah, we did wrong, I mean, that's a first step. It's very, very late, but it is a first step towards reconciling this, and hopefully, God forbid this happened again, that we would be able to prevent it because they know to be more vigilant.
Well, this new approach is certainly the work of the new police chief. If we look at that old police chief, he lied to the public. He blatantly said there was no serial killer in Toronto when they knew that there was. If you remember, Amanda, and I know you remember, but when they caught MacArthur, they'd already been tailing him, and the only reason they struck then was because he had another man in his room, in his home, and was about to strike again. So they had literally let a man go into the lion's den. You know, it could have all gone terribly wrong, and it's just crazy.
I mean, we are looking at a serial killer that was putting pieces into pot plants around the suburbs. I mean, you know, and it defies belief. It does. That's for sure. And hopefully, this new police chief, as you said, he's done the first right thing. So let's hope that he can continue and keep Toronto safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, don't worry, Patreon is still a thing. Even though we're a video podcast now, we are still serving up exclusive content to our Patreon subscribers. Patreon subscribers will continue to get the podcast a week early. We'll still have our special access to Amanda through the Facebook page if you are a patron. And we'll have our group video chats for our upper users, our group and single one-on-one video chats. So there is still plenty of reasons to go to patreon.com/MWMconfessions and see what tier suits you. But if you want to keep watching the video podcast, well, all you have to do is go to mwm.uscreen.io. After this week, every episode that we do will go on there, and you can watch the videos, see what we're talking about, watch the body language, and really get to know the cases in a whole new light. We really do feel that the video experience will bring something new to each and every one of you. Amanda, I'm loving this. I think this is looking so good already.
I think it's fantastic, and it's just so different. I'm nervous, like I'm on TV for the first time again. It's just a bit weird. It's a bit exciting, and I'm thrilled that we actually get to do this, because, as you know, there's been so many cases that I wanted to do, but they really needed to be a visual focused episode, and so now we can.
And that's the point. A few cases that are very specifically visual, we'll be able to cover those now in a whole new light, and it's all going to start in a moment with Stephen McDaniel. Monsters Who Murder Serial Killer Confessions continues.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions.
You're listening to, or perhaps watching, Monsters Who Murder. Well, sometime after the evening of June 25, 2011, 25-year-old Stephen McDaniel murdered fellow student and neighbour, 27-year-old Lauren Giddings, in Macon, Georgia. McDaniel had stalked Lauren for months leading up to the murder and even helped in the search for the woman prior to her body being found. McDaniel injected himself into the search and was actually interviewed live on air about the case. We'll see that in a moment. Amanda, take us through what we're about to see.
This is one of those moments that you just absolutely love. So McDaniel looks actually quite unkempt and unshaven, and his hair, he basically has this huge fro, which is very indicative of his sort of chaotic nature that he has, which when he then goes to court is all sort of cropped and pulled back. But he spends a lot of time sort of chatting to this reporter who keeps asking more and more questions, and he's like very, very intensely involved, and, you know, he's saying that all this stuff about how him and Lauren had, classes together, and they spent a lot of time together, and he'd gone over and helped her with a computer issue, you know, and he's just sort of like chatting so much, and it's quite interesting the angle they do, because it's sort of like looking from the side. It's sort of not a face on, but he's really sort of intensely involved, like wants to be the star of the show, and you can tell that there's a lot more going on.
Well, let's take a listen as he describes his fellow student, Lauren, and his concern with no one knowing at the time that he was the killer.
Yeah, Lauren was my neighbor. We're just trying to find out where she is at this point. I mean, no one has seen her since Saturday. I mean, the last time anyone heard from her was an email that she sent out, and no one's heard from her since.
Now, Amanda, we're going to go on a journey here from him talking to the press here and him being interviewed by the police. And without spoiling what we're about to see, he's very animated here, but he's shaking his head a lot, isn't he?
He certainly is, and that's because his body's not believing what he's saying. So he's saying, oh, no one's seen her, and so he's shaking his head. So his lies are coming through because his body's saying, no. That's wrong, you know. And so he goes, oh, you know, no one's seen her for days. And he goes, you know, and we're all upset. And he's doing things like this. You know, it is just one cue, and we need to look at more than one cue when we do things like this. But it's just amazing that every time he sort of says something sort of very definite, he looks away, like further away from the camera. So it's a lot of gesturing that's going on that is going to have a little bit of interest later on with the police interview.
Well, the journalist next asks about who she may have hung out with before asking what Lauren was like.
Did you see her hang out with anyone at the time, anything like that?
I mean, no one has seen her since Saturday. I haven't seen anything. I mean, you always hear noise outside, but it's just people walking by pretty much.
And she just recently graduated from Mercer?
Yeah, she and I were both JD students. We graduated back in May.
Now, it's interesting. He does look beyond the camera that time to his left as they talk about the college.
Yeah, that's right, because he's sort of gesturing to all the places that she is. And it's interesting that he almost motions to where her body is found just further down the street.
Oh, really?
So, you know, yeah, it's amazing. I've watched this and pulled this apart so many times. And a second journalist actually tries to join into the interview, and he sort of looks at her and goes back to the first one, because he has already believed that he's built a rapport with her and she's interested in what he has to say about Lauren. So it's almost like he is giving a eulogy.
Well, that's interesting. Look, let's have a look at this next bit, because let's look carefully, because there's a change in his demeanour that may be hard to pick up on.
What kind of person was she? I mean, what did you see?
I mean, she's as nice as can be. I mean, very personable, very much a people person.
Do you know anybody any enemies she might have had, somebody that might want to hurt her?
No, We don't know where she is. I mean, the only thing we can think is that maybe she went out running and someone snatched her. Because, I mean, we went over, one of her friends had a key, we went inside and tried to see if there was anything amiss, but, I mean, she had a door jammed that was sitting right by it, so there was no sign that anyone broke in. I mean, the door was locked when everyone got here. I mean, we just don't know where she is.
Okay, Amanda, this is why I love doing this as a podcast, because as a video podcast, because you have that cheeky smile on your face again. What have you picked up on?
This is an amazing one. Now, I get a lot of trouble on this podcast because I say we a lot. And the reason I use we is because I believe that this podcast is a learning experience, and I like to get everyone involved. So when I say we, it's a collective we for all of us. But what he's doing there is actually negating his personal attachment. So he's saying, we went over to her apartment. We looked in her room.
He's part of a group.
He's part of a group. He's not saying I went there, because then he's sort of saying, hey, look at me. I'm the person you need to be investigating. So by saying we, it's like, oh, that there's a whole group of them, and there's that collective need to find answers, rather than him knowing that he took her and cut up her body.
Well, it's interesting, because the reporter mentions a new development. Have a look at this.
What about in the parking lot area? I know they've been doing a lot of, I think that's where they have recovered the body or whatever they recovered from there.
Body?
Had you seen anything there? I mean, we don't know if this is the same person. You know what I mean? Like, they took out a body there earlier. We don't know if it's the same person or not. So that's how we're trying to ask people if they know who lived there. Are you okay, sir?
I think I need to sit down.
Okay.
Okay, talk to me about this. We know that he's the killer. Is this a genuine reaction, or is this him faking the shocking news that she's dead, or is he now worried that they found the body already?
Yes, all of the above. Okay, next question. I'm sorry. What we have is that he is so overwhelmed. His body has now gone into fight or flight, and he's frozen. So he doesn't know. He probably wants to throw up. He probably wants to run. He probably wants to scream. He has all of these emotions instantly going through, because he knows it's her, regardless that the journalist is trying to sort of say, oh, maybe it's not her yet, because there's someone else that they're just going to find that they're actually not looking for. Yeah, of course it's not. And so he is now going into a state of shock, because he expected it to take a little bit longer, I think. And he now knows that, like, the clock is literally ticking before he gets arrested, because he may have thought that, you know, the bins were going to be collected and her body was taken away, but they've got her. And so he knows it's ended. It's done.
So the thing is, this could be a genuine reaction to finding out someone you know is dead, right? And we know everything you're saying about what's really going on, but at this stage, he's still believable as a friend who's concerned. You don't agree?
No. This isn't a moment of sadness or loss. this is, oh my God, I'm done. This is self-preservation. This is him worried about what's going to happen to him, not what's happened to her. You know, there's no sort of like, you know, heart clutching, throat clutching, hand to the mouth, all those movements that sort of give us those moments that we're shocked to find that someone has passed. Mm. This is, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, and I'm live on television while this is happening.
Well, this is why you're the expert, because, you know, we've often talked about in the newsroom that if a partner or a parent cries, the more they cry, the more guilty they are. They killed the kid, you know, like that's known throughout newsrooms in the world. There were no tears here. This is why I thought, oh, maybe that could be passed off as, oh my God, my friend's dead. But I see what you're saying. It's a different kind of reaction.
Yeah, that's pure fear. He's in shock, and it's not shock, oh my God, my friend's been found. That's shock, oh my God, they're going to come and get me. Mm. It's self-preservation shock. It's not about anyone else except for him.
All right. Look, McDaniel goes, as we saw, and composes himself, and then he actually returns to the interview a little under half an hour later.
No one had seen her since Saturday because we all just, there's not a whole lot of interaction unless we're doing classes.
Right.
And she was doing an online version of it.
You all study together, though?
We were in, there's two different people, there's two companies that provide it. Kaplan provides it and Barbary provides it. I signed up with Barbary and I've been doing the lectures that they have in the mornings. She was doing the Kaplan online, so I hardly ever saw her. I mean, I would see her like, go out running, but I mean,
what time would she go out running?
I mean, I don't even know when.
At night or morning?
I saw her like midday a couple weeks ago. I mean, that was the last time I saw her, was coming back from the bar prep on the main campus because we got moved over there for a week or two.
But she normally would run.
She ran all the time. I mean, she had a group that she would go running with.
Amanda, this is fascinating to me. You spoke about distancing before, but it's gone from we were study buddies to I hardly ever saw her. I mean, his story is literally changing before our eyes.
Yeah, it has. It's been an entire 180 because he's gone from, oh, you know, that's our college and that's where we went together and we were in the same courses and all of this, to, oh, I hardly ever saw her. She did the online version and I did it with a different company. And I think maybe she might have gone running once and, you know, maybe I don't think I ever saw her. And, you know, it's amazing because, you know, he's all over the place because he needs to continue that narrative. But now he's taking those massive steps backwards. He doesn't want to be there. His body wants him to just shut down and shut up, but he's just going to continue with this narrative that's now, oh, yeah, I did know her once and I think I saw her and waved to her as she jogged past in the street. It's amazing that it was, you know, that we were best friends and I knew where her spare key was to, yeah, I don't really know her.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I'm still fascinated why he's gone back to the reporter. Has he, since finding out, been sitting there and going, okay, I've said this, I need to change the narrative now? What is his motivation for continuing to talk to this reporter?
In the simplest terms, he's an idiot. Basically, that's what this comes down to. You know, I have no filter. You know that I'll play it straight. This guy really wants his 5 minutes of fame. And he realizes that he has to continue because, like, news reporters get their bit and they move on and, like, you know, the story progresses and everything. But he demanded to be re-interviewed. I mean, he had no idea. And he doesn't know. All the cops are sitting there watching it going, you're our guy, you know.
Do you think they knew straight away?
Oh, 100%. They actually spoke to him during that half-hour break that he took.
Ah.
Like, they're like, come on, what do you know? We've just seen that interview. Well, what do you want to tell us? You know, and he didn't say much. He just sort of gave that vague statement again. So then when he went back on camera, he gave the vague one again that he'd just given to the police saying, I don't know what you're talking about. Don't know her.
Well, look, let's go back to that interview because he changes his story one more time.
I don't know anyone that would want to hurt her. She was as nice a person as there is.
Was she moving soon? Did you know anything about her?
Yeah, she was going to be moving out today. She was supposed to move out today because someone else was going to be moving into her apartment, the new law student.
Do you know if she was signing? Where is she from? Is she from Maryland?
Yeah, she's from up in Maryland.
Put this on you so we can hear you. Is that all right?
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Here, and you can just hold on to her. Thank you. Yeah, she's from Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, she was from up in Maryland. I mean, all her family was there, as far as I know. I mean, she...
What's going on in your mind right now? Like, what are you thinking?
Why would anyone do this?
She didn't hear anything.
No.
She didn't see anybody.
I just heard something. Maybe I could have helped.
Okay, don't worry. Do you want to sit down for a second? Get something to drink? Do you know if a bunch of her friends are getting together or anything?
I mean, that's how I found out that she was missing. A bunch of her friends came over yesterday night around midnight, and they hadn't seen her since Saturday, so they were trying to find out where she was.
So they were knocking on neighbors' doors and stuff?
They went in, they had a key to her apartment, and they checked around, didn't see anything out of place. I mean, it was locked when everyone got there.
That was midnight?
Yeah, around midnight, and then we went over to law school to see if maybe she was over in the library studying or something. And we looked up in the study rooms on the third floor, and there was no one there. Then we came back, we looked around, and just trying to find anything to figure out where she was.
She doesn't have any family in Georgia?
I don't know. I mean, as far as I know, all of her family is in Maryland.
Have you met her family before?
There was one time that I met them. They came down first year. She had a little dog, a little brown dog, that she would exercise out in front of the law school, and it got hit as she was coming across the road. I heard the car hit it and ran out, and she was there crying, and thankfully there was someone who came along who knew a vet or something, and they helped that, and her family came down, I think a couple weeks after that or something, and I met them just briefly.
Right.
But
is there a boyfriend or
anything? We've been trying to figure out, she has a boyfriend up in Atlanta, but I mean, someone called him, and he hadn't heard from her, and just no one could figure out where she was.
One of the things I love about that, he's very distraught, but sure, I can mic myself up, no problems at all. That's the TV geek in me. Amanda, he's gone from knowing her to hardly ever saw her to having very detailed knowledge about her life and her family.
Yes, it's amazing. You know, oh, and she's got a boyfriend here, and she had a little dog that got hit by a car, and her family lives here, and you know, and she was going to move there and everything. The best part of that, though, is when the journalist says, "What are you thinking?" and it takes him 3 seconds to answer. That is the part where I will swear, Hare was probably going shit, 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 and that's what his thought was doing, and it took him a while to sort of get past that to actually answer the question, and that's when he did that whole breakdown. But that is because he broke down, and it's just amazing how that actually went. And seeing all of this, I thought, I cannot wait to get into the interrogation tapes. This is going to be fascinating, and I was shocked.
Well, the interrogation tapes are coming up, but look, let's continue with where we are, because he gives even more details. Have a look at this.
Who was the last person to be with her? You said that somebody had seen her on Saturday?
Yeah, she went over to couple friends' house, Gary Mueller and Joe Cairns. They live over on Walnut, and they said that she was over there in the morning, and then that was the last time that anyone we've been able to find out from had seen her.
She hadn't mentioned what she was going to do that day or anything?
Joe, he got onto her computer last night to see if she'd say anything. She'd sent an email out to some people that afternoon talking about like going out to eat or something. And the last thing that anyone, there was an email that she sent out after 10 that night where she sent to, I think it was someone in Atlanta, a friend of hers in Atlanta, and she said that she was afraid in her apartment that she thought that someone had tried to break in on Thursday night, and she was afraid to stay in there, but...
Where did you hear that from, Joe?
He pulled it up and we read it off the screen.
She had said that to a friend in Atlanta?
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but...
And you hadn't heard anything on Thursday night?
No.
She never came to you to tell you anything?
No, I could have done something. I could have lent her a handgun. I've got a little handgun that I have for defense. And
she could have slept over or something.
Yeah, I mean, something. Yeah, I mean, if she was afraid in her apartment, then, I mean, get her out of there. That's what she said in the email. She thought that someone had tried to break into her apartment. She said, like, Macon hoodlums tried to break into my apartment on Thursday night.
Wow, this guy doesn't know when to stop, does he?
No, he doesn't. And the amount of information he just poured out would have taken the police days, maybe even a week, to actually find. So the fact that he has just blurted out all of this timeline of who she sent an email to, when, how, and why, talking about that there was a possible break-in the night before, that she had said she was going out for dinner and everything, this is what the police would like wear their shoes down, trying to piece together, and he's just given it all to them in 30 seconds. It's quite amazing. And, you know, he is now so worried. Like, his forehead there was so wrinkled and his eyebrows were so raised because he is so scared. He's like a rabbit in the headlights. He knows that it's coming. And he just needs to talk. And this is a stress response to an emotion like this, that he knows that time's up. And it's just so amazing how talkative he is, because it's going to switch. And it's just amazing how he can do that and then go into just this whole different persona.
Mm. Well, that interview was on June 30, and it was after friends of Lauren had raised the alarm. Police were there on the scene, and Detective David Patterson just seemed to hone in on McDaniel. McDaniel lived next door to Lauren, as we said, and whilst others were out looking for her, apparently his behaviour made some of her friends point him out to police. So this is an interesting bit, Amanda, that not only was it this interview that raised the alarm, but her very friends were looking at him with suspicion. Well, Patterson spoke to McDaniel in the squad car and then later had him taken to the Macon police station for a formal interview. Now, look, it should be noted at this time they had found the torso of Lauren. Her head and limbs were still missing. Amanda, we're about to watch some of the police interviews set the scene. We've seen a lot of interview scenes play out, but this one looks really odd.
Yeah, it is. And McDaniel is sitting at the end of the table, furthest away from the camera, and he is almost catatonic. There is barely any movement to him at all compared to what we've just seen on camera. So he has his long curly hair. He's wearing a blue shirt. The camera is actually above the door and it's sort of facing at an odd angle. And Detective Patterson walks in and he's already greeting the suspect before he's even got in. This is another guy I love. He is a fantastic interviewer, I can tell you that. And, you know, I like me a good interrogator.
Oh, so, don't we all? Because we've had some issues in the past where we've taken some interrogators to task, but I'm looking forward to seeing this guy.
Yeah, he's great. And he's really, like, if he'd come in a 10-gallon hat, I wouldn't have been surprised. He's just so cowboy. It's amazing, and I love it. And but he's so different to how McDaniel looks, because McDaniel is sitting there, and, like, he's literally, his arms are, like, loose beside his body. You know, it's like he'd been drugged and forgot to lie down. He really looks different to what we had just seen there. There's no flicking of the hair there or anything, you know. But Patterson, as I said, he comes in, he's great fun from the very first moment, and you're going to see a good interview, I can tell you that.
Well, let's not tease it any longer. Let's take a look at the first part of this police interrogation.
All right. I just got to ask you a few questions. Okay. You came down earlier tonight, me and you talked, all right. You don't have any weapons on you, do you?
No.
That's just you are. What's wrong? You know I'm Detective Patterson, right?
Yes.
Do you remember, put your hands up here, you remember us talking earlier tonight, right?
Yes.
You remember me earlier in the day?
Yes.
When we came down here and talked a little bit and then we left?
Yes.
Okay. I need to know about this girl right here. You know her?
Yes.
Who is that?
Lauren Giddings.
Does she live next door to you?
Yes.
When's the last time you seen her?
2 or 3 weeks ago.
Okay. Was you friends with Lauren?
Yes.
Look at me when you talk to me, son. Okay?
Amanda, that's... Look, this is weird. I get it. He's a rabbit straight out of the box. And the way Patterson actually moves even closer as he shows McDaniel the photo, he's leaning against him, looking over his shoulder. But this guy is a completely different guy to who we just saw being interviewed by the press.
Exactly. And this is the same day. This is the same day. And to see him go from that to this, that's the next red flag that we have. This is him actually sort of saying, I have to shut down because I can't do what I did earlier because what I did earlier was stupid. And so I'm going to go into the opposite persona to sort of go for maybe the crazy plea, just something like that. But, you know, when this started, I was grinning from ear to ear. I thought, oh, my God, Patterson is going to be one of these guys. Come on, son, put your hands on the table. That's my there you go. I've done my first and only accent. I'm never doing it again. Please don't hate me for
yo
that
boy
one.
Come but, over here, you know.
Exactly.
I still exactly. think yours was better than any accent I've ever done on this show.
I'll never do another one, I promise.
No, I loved
but
it.
Like yeah. But McDaniel is like just this catatonic thing. And like he says, put your hands on the table. And so he just sort of does this robotic put down. It's like,
yeah, I almost
if I was him, I would have had
it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well,
there's the next accent.
There you go. Well, I tell you what, forget Dancing with the Stars, because this is a beautiful dance that you're about to watch as Patterson takes to the dance floor and tries to lead his partner to admit the crime.
Was you friends with her?
Yes.
Close friends?
We were good.
I mean, y'all were friends, right? Both
yes.
of y'all are law students. You're studying to be an attorney, right?
Yes.
What kind of law do you want to go into? Criminal law?
Yes.
Civil? Is that what you want to do for a living?
Yes.
Okay. Are you almost finished?
Yes.
Okay. So you don't have too much more to do, right?
No.
All right. Are you going to stay here in Macon?
I don't know.
Did you used to work at the district attorney's office in Macon?
Yes.
Was you on the prosecutor side or the defense side?
Prosecutor.
So you were on our side?
Yes.
Right. You never worked on the other side?
No.
Did you like it when you were down there?
Yes.
Now, Amanda, we all know that usually you don't like it when the detective does all the talking, but I've got to say, right now, I think he's on the right path.
I totally agree, you know, and he's showing interest by sort of throwing in there that he knows some of his background. So I love when the detectives throw in information about the suspect to say, hey, we've already looked into you, so don't bother trying to lie because we're going to know, you know, and for him to say, you know, oh, you want to work on our side. I mean, that was a great, great response to that. But
I noticed
McDaniel,
that one.
Yeah, but McDaniel's not saying much. You know, he's got this, yes, I don't know, yes.
Mm.
And it's just so weird. In that time, we've had 20 yeses. That is it. And it's quite amazing because, you know, we've got Patterson going all over the place. You know, we know that he's seen the newsreel. He knows what McDaniel should be talking like. So they know his personality already, you know. But he's not asking hard questions to sort of get any sort of rise out of him. He's not ready for any curveballs yet. So that they just sort of need to work out what's going on, because it could be that McDaniel has had a complete psychotic break and he's gone, you know, and that could be what they're having to deal with now. But Patterson's just going to go with the chatty. He's, you know, there's no threat. He calls him son. There's all of this sort of stuff going on, you know. But McDaniel, as you said, you expect to hear the robot gears because he is being robotic.
Well, it's interesting. We're very early into this interview and they have found parts of Lauren. There's no other nice way to put that. But we know that Patterson is hoping McDaniel will slip up. Let's see.
Got along with everybody?
Yes.
Okay. And you've lived next to Lauren for a long time?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know where she's at tonight?
No.
Hmm?
No.
Have you ever seen her with that dress on?
No.
You have no idea where she's at?
No.
Okay. Yes.
Randy Gonzalez said don't forget that he needs a voucher for that beautiful swap because he's going to take it up to the crime lab.
Okay, my major didn't do that, but okay. All right. Look, just tell me what happened, brother.
I don't know.
Well, where's she at? I need you, I'm asking you for your help. I'm a detective, and I'm asking you for your help. Okay, I'm asking you for help. I need your help. Can you help me?
I don't know.
You don't know if you can help me?
Yes.
I need your help. Help me out. Tell me what to do. Has anybody asked you for help today? I need your help. I'm asking you as a friend for help. Can you help me?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You can't help a friend out?
I don't know what you need.
I need to know where Lauren's at.
I don't know.
When's the last time you seen her?
2 or 3 weeks ago.
Have you ever seen anybody over her house the last couple nights?
No.
Okay.
This is really interesting. There's a couple of questions I've got off the back of that. It's not really professional during an interrogation to answer your phone and have a bit of a chat. Is there a psychology behind that? Is there a reason he's allowing that to happen?
There certainly is. What he's done there is to say, look, this is just a conversation. It's not a formal interview. You're not being interrogated. I need your help, friend.
Yes.
And so what he does there he's creating this rapport with him. And so, yeah, the phone rings. Yeah, that's okay. I can take this call. I can have a laugh and a joke. But what is interesting is that McDaniel doesn't take his eyes off him. He doesn't move. He stares at the officer the entire time while he's sort of leaning back in his chair and being loose and easy. McDaniel just stares at him and doesn't move.
McDaniel really seems shut down here.
Oh, he has. I mean, as I said, this could be a complete and utter break from reality that he's having, or he has done enough of his criminology degree. And like I often say on here, if you get arrested or interviewed by police, you ask for a lawyer and you don't say anything. So he's thinking, well, I won't say anything, but he is, because he's saying, yes, I don't know. Yes, no, I don't know. And so that is still responses, but I think he's trying to sort of negate what he did earlier, because he's trying to take it back by not being so chatty now. But it's like the damage is done, and he's just frustrating.
Yeah. Well, look, Patterson tries to make him open up by asking for a possible scenario. Patterson is hoping McDaniel will slip up.
If you knew where she was, would you tell me?
Yes.
What do you think happened to her?
I don't know.
Do you even care that no one can find her?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know, do you?
Yes.
Amanda, that was a quick piece. What did you take from that?
Well, the yes was different that time. There was a force behind it. So he was actually disgusted that Patterson thinks that he doesn't care. You know, this is supposed to be a catatonic state, but there's already that first crack. So it was so forced, and that's why Patterson sort of asked it a second time, you know, and McDaniel went straight back to that robotic voice again. But it was just enough of a tiny slip up that Patterson goes, oh, well, there's your answer. So, you know. He's getting there.
Well, the interview continues for 15 minutes with McDaniel saying little else besides yes, no, I don't know. And throughout, Patterson is towing the line before he throws something at McDaniel, hoping for a reaction.
You don't know.
No.
That's what you want me to tell her mother and her father, is that you don't know.
I don't know.
Not that you're sorry that she's missing. Not that you've been trying to help me all day find her, but you just wanted me to tell her I don't know.
I don't know.
Are you a sorry piece of shit that you want me to tell her that? You got your ass on that fucking news and stood out there and gave a media report that her mother saw about her missing daughter. And you want me to sit there and tell them that you don't know? Is that what you want me to tell them? Because you're all over the news. You sure stood out there and ran your mouth to the news media. But now you're going to get out here and you don't fucking know. You know. You're just a sorry piece of shit that don't give a fuck. Right?
Yeah.
Well, why'd you tell the media everything? Do you need to see what you told the media today? Yes. It was on the 11 o'clock news. Well, I'm asking you. Tell me. I want to know.
I don't know where she is.
That ain't what you told the media. You didn't stand in front of that camera and say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
What? I love this guy. Love him.
I told ya. He is so good. And, like, he just gone through, like, a quarter of an hour of, you know, getting these yeps and everything, you know, and he's talking about his family and all this sort of stuff, and then, bang, he goes in with that. And, you know, McDaniel just sort of swallows a yep. He sort of doesn't know, and, you know, it came from nowhere, this sudden attack that Patterson's gone with, because he had been gentle and caring, and now he's like, you know, and you don't give a fuck about them. And it's just so amazing that McDaniel didn't see it coming, and he didn't react as big as I think Patterson hoped he would. But, you know, it just sort of bang, after all these sort of one after the other questions of family and, you know, who did you live with and why are you at this school and everything that McDaniel only gave yes and no answers to then come up with this, and that McDaniel didn't see it. He was able to sort of make him shock and sort of not know how to respond because he was getting in his face. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I like Patterson.
Yeah, I do too. Well, Patterson then asked McDaniel about the weapons he owns.
Right. You buy all these weapons. Was you ever in the military?
No.
What do you need all these weapons for? Are you scared somebody's going to hurt you?
No.
What do you need all these weapons for?
To have.
Why? There's a reason why. Were you molested as a child?
No.
Then why do you need all these weapons?
To have.
Why? Give me one good reason. Just give me one reason.
To have.
Why? Does it make you feel important?
No.
Hmm? Are you a big guy because you got a weapon?
No.
It's turning, and it's about to turn even more, Amanda, because after another 10 minutes, Sergeant Chapman enters the room. Shall we take a look?
Yeah, I can't wait.
I just don't fucking believe that shit. Don't stand up yet.
What's up, buddy? Did you talk to him about his guns?
Yeah.
When was the last time you shot those guns?
I haven't.
You've never shot a gun?
No.
Have you ever shot any gun in your whole life?
No.
Never?
No.
So you bought three guns that you've never shot?
Yes.
Why?
To have.
For what?
To have.
To have, to hold. Amanda, you've got that smile. I mean, you've got to laugh. But I saw while we were watching that, I saw you having a little smile on your face.
Oh, this was a great tactic that they've just done. So Chapman has come in, no niceties, no how are you going, son, and all this sort of stuff. He talks straight to Patterson and does the third person. Did you ask him about his guns? You know, this is just well orchestrated. And what we have is Patterson being the good cop. Now the bad cop come in and he's angry and pissed off and, you know, wants to sort of have his go at him. And though Chapman's wearing a pink shirt, I love that he has that strength to do that. I love pink on a man, and this guy wears it well, and he's just a bit cute.
I wear pink all the time. Well, not all the time, but I've been known to have a pink shirt.
But when you're expecting this big, hard cop to come in to be the heavy, you're not expecting a pink polo. But it just works, and it just made me smile a bit more. But it's just so interesting because for him to come in and say, you know, did you ask about the guns? It just sort of shows that they all are on the same page and they all know how this is going to break down and create that narrative that they need. And so it's just a matter of time for him to sort of start to confess that, well, that's what they're hoping. But I just love that that he just comes in and it totally ignores that McDaniel's even in there, as if they were having a conversation in the hallway and had nothing to do with a dissected body they had found and the killer sitting right in front of him. So it's just amazing. You know, I could see this. I could write this script and make a movie out of just that scene. I just loved it. Just loved it.
Well, I tell you what, in our next episode, I don't wear a pink polo, but I will wear a pink shirt under my blazer for you.
So I love a pink shirt on a man. I've got no problem with it.
Everyone will have to watch the video next week, because this is where we're going to have to leave it, because next week when we continue with this story, Chapman is going to go in hard while Patterson leaves the room, and you have to see how the dynamic changes as part of that. Amanda, this really is a fascinating case. Thank you for bringing it to us.
No, thank you. And I love that we can see this on camera. Doing the podcast is great, but being able to relive what we're seeing, I just love it. It's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm really, really enjoying this. It's actually been a bit of a thrill. I think it's coming up really nicely. Don't forget, if you want to see the video of this podcast, go to mwm.uscreen.io. That's mwm.uscreen.io. We will see you next week for another Monsters Who Murder Serial Killer Confessions with the one and only Serial Killer Whisperer, Amanda Howard. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Robert.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.